When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Date Night Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Russell, and with me is my co-host, Ashley Russell.
Ayo! Hey, everybody.
This is a show where on each episode, Ashley and I, we talk about a new movie that's playing in theaters, and then we break it down, whether we thought it was good or bad, and whether or not it would make for a good date movie. And on this episode, we are finally going to be talking about the long-awaited sequel, Top Gun Maverick, which is, of course, the follow-up to the original Top Gun, which came out in 1986. Kind of a defining film of the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one that we've covered here on this show. I believe we're both fans of the original. Is that safe to say?
It is safe to say. And I will let you know that you popped my Top Gun cherry.
You hadn't seen it?
I hadn't seen it before.
I guess that's why we watched it.
Yeah.
We did an episode. Yeah, during the pandemic, we were doing episodes on films that one of us hadn't seen, kind of catching up on older films. And we did an episode kind of comparing Top Gun with Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
Days of Thunder, that was an attempt to kind of get the team back together, kind of recapture the magic. Didn't work out quite as well. It's kind of interesting that they hadn't done a sequel to Top Gun until 36 years later.
Yeah.
Because it was the biggest film of that year. I mean, a huge movie. But yeah, I'm still a fan of it. I mean, I think it holds up. It works kind of like a music video.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, you always say it's like an 80s rock video, music video.
Like a very like homoerotic 80s rock video. It's something you can just kind of vibe out on. There's not much of a plot. One of the best soundtracks ever.
Yeah.
It rocks. And I mean, it's not the deepest movie.
No.
You know, you're not getting deep characterizations there.
You do have like a little love story there.
Between Goose and Maverick, absolutely. I feel like it's a movie that shouldn't work as well as it does.
Yeah.
It just, for whatever reason, just the various elements in that moment, in that time, it works. And it's, for me, it's an irresistible movie.
Well, and it still works. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, hell
like,
yeah. I rewatched it before Maverick. I still love it.
Still works, in my opinion.
I mean, these movies, of course, they're powered by cruise control. And I've been seeing a lot of articles lately describing Tom Cruise as the last movie star.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I would argue against. There aren't too many actors who have sustained like a high level at their career decade after decade after decade.
Well, he can still do action. What is he, in his 60s?
He's going to be 60.
Yeah. So
he's like Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
And then he does all of his own stunts.
He still does, you know, he gets injured on films.
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing it for a while. He's made a lot of great movies. And so beyond Top Gun and the Mission Impossible movies, do you have a favorite Tom Cruise film or performance?
I have two.
Yeah.
My first one
is... It's hard to pick just one.
...is Minority Report.
Yeah.
My second one is Show Me the Money! Jerry Maguire.
Two solid flicks.
Yeah.
For me, I got to call out his performance, kind of a supporting performance in Magnolia.
Oh, that's your favorite, though.
He's playing Frank T.J. Mackey, just like a horrible motivational speaker for men. And, you know, I single it out because it's a different kind of performance from him. It's very much at odds with, like, the kind of carefully crafted persona.
Well, because he's used to playing, like, the hero, like, the main man.
Yeah, but every now and then he plays a dirtbag.
Yeah.
Like he does in Collateral, like he did in Tropic Thunder. And when he can play a great dirtbag, like 100%. But I also want to call out what I think is his best movie of the past decade, which is Edge of Tomorrow. And to me, that's just, it's a really propulsive, exciting, ingenious sci-fi action movie.
It's different. It's a different movie. It was original.
It's a lot of fun.
It was a good movie.
Yeah. So for this movie, Top Gun Maverick, you know, 36 years since the last Top Gun. And when this movie opens, Pete Mitchell, a.k.a. Maverick, he's working as a test pilot for the military.
Yeah.
And as we see right away, he's got like old pictures of Goose hanging up in his locker.
Yeah. Obviously, that was his best friend.
By Anthony Edwards in the original. Yeah. And his character's death was a major event.
That film. I mean, he felt guilty of his death.
His wingman, yeah. Right? It's a little strange because at the end of the first film, you know, he's got the dog tags. I don't know if you remember this. Instead of giving the dog tags to his wife, who was played by Meg Ryan, they give it to Maverick for whatever reason. I guess maybe he requested it. He just had to have it. And then the final scene, he chucks those dog tags into the ocean, which I guess is symbolic, like, I'm moving on. You know,
I'm moving on.
What do you think that's symbolic of?
I think it was like, I'm putting you to rest.
Exactly. I'm moving on. I'm moving forward, I should say.
To me, that sounds a little selfish. When you say, I'm honoring your death by, you know, like...
With this gesture that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I feel like that's why those dog tags should have gone to Meg Ryan, right? Like it was her husband.
I think this movie, they didn't miss out on bringing Meg Ryan back. I mean, they had her death was off screen. Like she died, you know, a while ago, blah, blah, blah.
I wonder if they tried reaching out and she's like, I'm not up for it.
She's like, I'm done.
That's possible. But the point I'm trying to make with the dog tags is that it gives Maverick that gesture. But at the beginning of this film, 36 years later, he's still got those pictures hanging. So he hasn't moved forward.
I still have pictures of my best friends and not hanging on my wall, but they're in my closet.
And we'll get into Goose's son, Rooster, played by Miles Teller. But if Maverick hadn't chucked those dog tags selfishly into the ocean, he could have handed them down to his son.
I mean, I agree. I mean, that was one of the weird things in the first movie.
Because it's a gay romance.
It is not a gay romance.
Yeah. So in an early scene, Maverick, he pushes this jet prototype past a Mach 10. So this like military division doesn't get replaced with drones, I think is the idea. You got Ed Harris. He wants to scrap this jet program and replace it with a drone program. And proving that this prototype can hit Mach 10 will allow them to keep their funding.
Yeah.
That's kind of the general idea of this first big scene.
Yeah.
And so he pushes this jet fighter as far as it will go until he literally like blacks out from the G-force and the plane explodes.
Yeah. I mean, he completely destroyed a multi-billion dollar plane just to get a little extra.
Well, yeah, like he hits Mach 10. He hits Mach 10.
All he needed to do was hit Mach 10 and come back down.
He hits the Mach 10 and everyone's happy. Everyone's cheering. And then he's like, let's see if I can push this a little further. And so the plane explodes in the sky. And I guess that's just to show us like, hey, classic Maverick.
Well, yeah.
He's still the same Maverick.
He's still pushing it to the max. He's still in the danger zone.
He's thumbing his nose at authority.
Yeah. That's why he's still captain and not moving on up. That was a big thing in this movie, was that he was still at the same rank he was.
Well, because he wants to fly. He doesn't want to be a desk jockey.
Fly, and he's not a big... I don't think he wants to be that yes man.
He likes to be in the cockpit, in the action. And if he keeps advancing, he won't be flying as much.
Yeah.
And so after this, he gets orders from Iceman, who's played by Val Kilmer, to train a group of Top Gun graduates for a highly dangerous mission. And as I mentioned earlier, one of these graduates is Rooster, who's played by Miles Teller, who is the son of Goose. And this film basically makes him an orphan because like it establishes that his mom, Meg Ryan, did die.
Yeah.
I have to assume that like they reached out to her. And it just, for whatever reason, like they couldn't make the deal work. They're like, yeah, we're just going to kill her.
It's like, it's just going to be easy just to have her like die of
cancer. I feel like they must have, I mean, because we got Val Kilmer in here doing like some solid dramatic work. And so if you can get Val Kilmer, you could probably get Meg Ryan. I mean.
Yeah, I think I heard that she wasn't contacted. They didn't want to have it like nostalgia, like.
Well, then what is Iceman? What is Iceman doing there?
Iceman is the only nostalgic one that they wanted in the film. They wanted us to progress in Maverick's life, not go back. And I think they felt like the first love interest, what was her name?
Yeah, Kelly McGillis.
Her and Meg Ryan were going back. I think that's why they didn't bring them back.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally possible. It just would have been nice to see Meg Ryan on the big screen again.
It would have been.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then, yeah, we get a really long scene in a bar where we meet the whole Top Gun gang. And here we've got Hangman, Phoenix, Payback, Fanboy, and Bob.
I love Bob.
Honestly, my first impression here was that this group is kind of just like a bunch of smug jerk-offs.
Yeah.
Much like Cruise was in the first.
Yeah. Well, they all have big egos, right? Like, they're the best in their program.
They're hotshot pilots.
They're
if you graduate Top Gun, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. But I will say by the end, all these characters had endeared themselves
they
to
did,
me.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this scene, they're coming off like swinging dicks.
Even Hangman.
I like Hangman. Yeah. He's played by Glenn Powell, and he's definitely one of the standouts.
He took
in this
on
group.
Val Kilmer's
for sure
persona from the first one.
Absolutely,
like that jackass know-it-all.
This movie mirrors the first,
yeah,
in a lot of ways. There's more of a structure to it. Like the first movie barely has a plot, barely has a structure. Like the only major event that happens is Goose's death.
I love the fact that they have Phoenix, the female.
Yeah,
there
we go.
In this class, like, I'm just like, yes, female power.
Yeah, a little more diversity
in this
group. And in this scene, we also meet Penny, the bar owner, who's played by Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah. And boy, does she not age.
Both she and Cruise.
She is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, holy smoke, she's been around for years. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
Good genes.
She's a welcome presence in this film, even if the movie doesn't have a whole lot to do with her. And even though you might disagree, she and Cruise don't really have a whole lot of romantic chemistry. I guess that's keeping with the Top Gun ethos, the hetero romance. There's no chemistry.
I think that they're not supposed to have chemistry at the beginning. Like, she's trying to blow them off.
Well, they have a history.
They have a history. They've had a previous relationship.
Yeah. I think by the end, we're supposed to feel some chemistry.
Yeah, I felt it.
Yeah.
I felt chemistry at the end.
I mean, definitely a trade up from Kelly McGillis.
Yeah.
No offense to Kelly McGillis.
No, but
Jennifer Connelly. That is a trade up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this bar scene.
And it was age appropriate.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, she was age appropriate for Tom Cruise.
Yeah, they're not like pairing him up with like Ana de Armas or something like that.
Yeah, you know, it was welcoming.
Like Zendaya or
something. Right? Like, I mean, because that's what
that would be so creepy.
But that's what they
that
do.
That would be horrifying. And it's, I mean, it's not a huge focus of this movie, but it's in there. And yeah, I mean, this bar scene, it goes on for a long time. I took a piss break at one point in the middle of this scene.
A pee break?
And when I came back, this scene was still going on. Does this scene end with Miles Teller singing Great Balls of Fire?
Yes.
I'm kind of glad I missed that.
Yeah. Well, you don't really see it. Like, it is.
That's what his dad did in the first.
Well, yeah. So Jennifer Connelly's character pretty much tricked Tom Cruise into paying for everybody's drinks, and his card kept getting declined and, you know, all of these
things.
Yeah,
I saw that bit.
And then he gets kicked out. And I think they lose power, or they lose like the jukebox, and then Miles Teller, like Rooster, goes
entertains
up
everyone
and entertains everybody. And then there's a flashback from when Miles Teller, as a little boy, was sitting on top of the
does
piano.
It show a clip of the original film? Okay, yeah.
And you see it. And you see that flashback in Tom Cruise's eyes. It was pretty fun.
Like Maverick's having the flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, after this work, we kind of start, you know, establishing this mission that these pilots are training for. And it involves destroying a uranium facility in an unnamed country. We don't even specify what country it is, who the enemy is. Mm-hmm. I think they keep it kind of vague. And I mean, that's an intentional choice.
I'm sure.
The original film kind of kept it vague. I mean, you could infer that it was the Soviets in the first film. But this one, they don't really pinpoint a specific enemy. And so for this mission, to avoid radar detection, these pilots, they have to fly low to the ground towards the entrance of the facility. And then after they drop the payload, they have to do this steep vertical climb out of the canyon, which is going to push all the planes up to Mach 10, I believe. We come to learn it's basically a suicide mission. John Hamm, who plays like one of the commanding officers, he's not even really providing false hope that these guys are going to come back.
Yeah, no.
He just wants them to bomb it and do your best.
Yeah.
Like, come on home if you can.
Get back if you can. Like, not really reassuring to...
No. This is, I guess, one key difference with the first. The first movie doesn't really build. It's just like, by the end, it's, you know, it's no longer like a training exercise. It's like a real deal, and we're just kind of thrown into it. This movie really builds up this mission that these fighters are training for. And you get a real sense of what the stakes are, what the specific goal is, what the risks are going to be, and just how difficult this challenge is in front of them. So that creates a lot of tension kind of riding into the climax. And that's a welcome improvement over the original. Original, like I was saying, it's more of a vibe. You know, you got the music, you got great aerial photography. But this movie is more of a like
cinematic.
Like edge of your seat type of like action.
Drama, you know, thrilling.
And I appreciated that, I guess, more structure and leaning on providing tension.
Well, and I also appreciate that like nowadays, this is how war is. It's not like a full-on battle with another country. Like
strategic ops.
It's strategic operations. It's like... We find out that there's secret uranium facility hidden in the mountains that, you know, we bomb the shit out of them.
Sure.
You know, that's what we do.
That's the American way.
Well, that's the Top Gun way.
Well, so yeah, a big bulk of this movie is kind of watching these pilots trying to successfully complete a trial run for this mission, which none of them can do because it's so impossible. But it turns out the only one who can... is Maverick. And because of that, he's going to lead the strike mission. And so I guess without going further into spoilers, what were your overall thoughts on Top Gun Maverick?
Oh, so good. Like it was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. Because I mean, we've seen a lot of duds.
Well, I feel like this year, like the big movies, like the big tempo movies have really sucked.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of like Uncharted. I'm thinking
you don't talk to me about Uncharted.
I'm thinking of the fucking Batman.
Wow. Okay.
And Doctor Strange. Mm. Like all these movies just like sucked big time.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I wonder like, are the movies getting worse or am I just getting more cynical? Like just harder to please. And then you see a movie like this, which has just a lot of old school thrills and just expert craftsmanship. And it's totally working and it's totally transporting. And you're reminded why you go to these in the first place.
Obviously, obviously there was probably CGI all up in this movie, but I didn't
You don't get the sense that entire shots are created out of CGI. I mean, I'm sure there's like, they're animating missiles like over like live action stuff. That's a different deal than.
But like all these movies that you're mentioning, it's like it's all CGI.
Heavy
like,
CGI, heavy green screen.
I mean, you have actors acting and with nothing in front of them.
Even Batman. Like people want to pretend that was all practical. Ton of green screen in that, ton of computer animation in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, here it's a different deal because the actors are actually flying the planes.
Yeah. Tom Cruise put the actors in like hardcore flight simulation. It really pays off, rigorous from what I've read.
It pays off in the sense that we're putting cameras on the planes and we can see the actors in the cockpit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the background is moving with them. It's totally convincing.
Yeah.
And just expert editing. The editing, the sound design really goes a long way towards making these scenes not only exciting, but easy to follow.
And I will tell you, I'll be glad not to see another preview of this movie. We've seen this preview of this movie for 2.5 years now?
It was supposed to come out year of COVID.
Yeah, 2020.
And then, And then Paramount just kept punting it down. But when you see the movie, you can see why.
Oh, yeah, because they knew it was going to be a major success.
I mean, this movie, it didn't need to be this good to be successful.
It didn't.
Like, it's a sequel to Top Gun. It's going to do well.
Yeah.
And I feel like they went above and beyond.
They did.
To really make it like a home run. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll get into spoilers for Top Gun Maverick. All right, we're back. And we're going to get into some spoilers for Top Gun Maverick. And, you know, let's touch on Val Kilmer's appearance in this.
Yeah, I did not realize. I mean, I knew he had cancer. Like, I knew he had throat cancer in real life.
Well, you haven't seen the documentary, Val.
I haven't, no.
Like, there's a great documentary on Amazon Prime, and it goes into detail about what he's endured in recent years and does, like, a great kind of recap of his career and his highlights, and definitely goes into a lot of Top Gun stuff. And I'd recommend it to anyone who's curious to check that out. It's a very, very intimate documentary. And yeah, it's called Val and it's streaming on Amazon Prime. And then while you're on Amazon Prime, you might as well check out our film, Tiny Dancers.
Duh. Come on.
Because you're going to need a pick-me-up after Val.
Seriously.
So yeah, check out our film, Tiny Dancers.
But I mean, he did it. Like, so he is Maverick's boss. Like, boss's boss. Like, he is running the Top Gun program, like the show.
And in this film, his character Iceman is sick.
Yeah.
They work that into the narrative. And there's a really poignant, intimate scene between Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise. And, you know, because Val Kilmer can't really talk.
No.
He's typing this on a computer.
Yeah.
But it's a good performance.
It's such a good performance.
And it probably will be his last performance. Mm.
And then he does speak.
He does. Yeah. He says a couple of lines at the end.
It's heart-wrenching.
The scene has that extra poignancy because, you know, you've got a lot of art imitating life here.
Yeah.
In a very kind of bittersweet way.
Well, apparently.
It's terrific.
Iceman has kind of been keeping him out of trouble. So he's always been kind of like Maverick's guardian angel within the Air Force and why he's still around.
And it's a nice turn for their characters.
Yeah, it really is.
The rivalry that kind of fueled the first film. So this scene ends. And then shortly after, Iceman dies.
Yep.
And we get a funeral scene. And then that kind of leads us into the last act of this film, which is kind of like a different movie altogether. Because it's basically like a 40-minute action scene that we get at the end here. And so it starts with the pilots taking off from an aircraft carrier in the ocean.
Yep.
And they're embarking on their mission. We get a sequence of them flying low orbit, successfully evading radar detection and missile targeting.
It's so the tension is so there because if they go up even an inch, like, there are missiles that will kill them.
I can't imagine flying a plane this fast.
No.
Where your moves have to be this precise.
Yeah.
And like I was saying earlier, the movie is building up to this scene. So you know, like, what the mission is. You know what their course is. And so as soon as they embark on it, it's edge of your seat time. And the movie just sustains this high tension all the way to the end. And so they're successful in destroying the uranium facility. But that sets off defense air missiles that the team then has to evade. And there's a whole bunch of, like, swooping and dodging and barrel rolls and aerial flips as they try to dodge these missiles. And at one point, a missile is locked onto Rooster. But Maverick kind of swoops in and sacrifices his plane.
Yeah.
And ejects out into hostile territory. So while he's on the ground, Maverick gets targeted by an enemy airship.
A helicopter.
And he's about to get vaporized. Like, this chopper, like, pretty much has him dead to rights. When Rooster blows this airship out of the sky, but Rooster also gets shot down.
Yeah.
And he has to eject. So now they're both, Maverick and Rooster, they're both on foot in hostile territory, and they come onto an abandoned F-14.
Well, so it's in the airstrip. So there was a bunch of steps for the military to take before they went into this mission. So the aircraft carrier shot missiles at the airport that was there. And so they couldn't take off on their airplanes. All their newer airplanes were all grounded now.
Right.
And so this is the same airport that was bombed earlier that they came across. And they found an old airplane.
And this is back from like Original Top Gun days.
Yeah. And so they stole this airplane out of this carrier and took off on the runway that was blown to smithereens and was able to make it out.
Oh, isn't it like there's a really short runway?
It's a short runway. And so it's like a drawbridge or something in front of them. And so they had to really go steep like they did in the original mission.
And so, yeah, they're able to get off this runway and they're airborne. And then they get flanked by these two Su-57s. These are like the world's most advanced hyperjets.
Yes.
And, you know, again, Maverick, he's in a, you know, an F-14, and, you know, these hyperjets kind of flank them. The hyperjets, they don't fire at first because it's one of their planes.
It's one of their planes. They're like, what's going on?
And eventually they kind of make them.
Yep.
And Maverick, there's like a brief little exchange where like he tells Rooster to eject. And I think like the eject isn't working.
Yep.
And then Rooster says something like, you know, what would you do if I wasn't in the plane? And then that's when Maverick chooses to engage these two planes.
Yeah.
And we're doing some fancy air maneuvering. And through that, he successfully takes them out. And I mean, this is probably when the movie is at its most intense and edge of your seat. My description is not really doing justice to how this plays out on screen. Yeah. Like this is gripping, like all the way through.
But it's so cool because Rooster is in Goose's spot. Rooster is
exactly
Maverick's wingman.
Exactly.
And this scene. And it's just...
And they kind of acknowledge that at the end. And that got me a little choked up.
Yeah.
When they, you know, when they kind of had that little moment.
Well, Rooster was like, what's all these things doing back there? And he's like, I don't know. That was your dad's territory. You know, he's like, okay, I'll figure it out.
So, yeah. So it looks like they're finally in the clear. But then, uh-oh, another Su-57 locks onto them. And by now they've exhausted all their countermeasures. Like they don't have like rear flares. They're out of moves pretty much. And so it seems like imminent death is upon them until Hangman flies out of the heavens.
Oh my goodness.
And destroys the Su-57. And that's a good moment for Hangman, for Glenn Powell.
Well, because he's such an asshole in the film. In the beginning, I mean, he acts like he's the best and like Val Kilmer.
Like Val Kilmer, yeah. You don't like him at first, and then he just kind of warms
and
you over.
He redeems himself.
Yeah. And after this, it's celebration time, right? We're like, we're partying on the airship deck and throwing helmets in the air. I'm crying. And yeah, like I said, there's a poignant exchange between Maverick and Rooster. You know, something about dads. I can't remember the exact words, but this is a good movie for dads or to like see with your dad.
Yeah.
So I guess.
Well, and they squash their beef because they were supposed to have a conversation about what happened. And I think they squash their beef at this point.
Well, being through this.
Yeah. It's like.
Gulag. It doesn't matter. Of terror. Yeah. And yeah, and there is something just kind of inspiring about the way these guys have each other's backs.
Yeah.
And yeah, like Hangman getting to the airship, landing safely, and realizing his whole crew hasn't returned, and then going back for them. I mean, that's, you don't see a lot of heroes in the real world. So yeah, I think overall we were pretty big fans. What grade would you give this?
Oh gosh, an A.
Yeah, it's a rock. Solid A.
Rock solid A. It is such a great date movie.
Yeah.
Like
great date movie.
Whoa.
Better dad movie, but a solid date movie.
Yeah.
People who listen to the show, I mean, hopefully they know that I don't like to dish out a whole lot of hyperbole on movies. You know, I try not to get too hyped for films. You know, I try and keep my expectations in check. And for this movie, I was pretty hyped. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, 2 years of previews.
I know you were very hyped.
I was
about
hyped,
this movie,
and
yeah.
The movie surpassed my expectations. Like I didn't think it was gonna be this good,
which is rare for you.
It never happens.
Yeah,
and so this is. I mean, not trying to be hyperbolic, but this is probably the best action movie I've seen since Fury Road. I mean,
that's been a long time.
I mean, you had like two Mission Impossible movies in there, both solid action movies. But this, like with the aerial footage and the way it's edited, like the degree of difficulty, like doing this climax, this isn't like something you shoot for like a week. You put it together in a couple days. Like it must have taken a month after month after month to get all this footage and to assemble it as tightly as it is.
As it could be. Because yeah.
Like, it's so tightly edited.
You think it'll be up for Oscars?
A whole bunch of technical Oscars. Yeah. Of course. I mean, you know, as far as like Best Picture, whatever. you know, they're busy giving that to movies like Coda and Drive My Car and all that good stuff. So I don't know if Top Gun has a place for the Best Picture. But it's probably my favorite movie of the year so far. And yeah, can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, go out and see it, people. Like, you won't regret spending that $40 for two tickets for IMAX.
$40 to $50.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
It is worth it.
So that's Top Gun Maverick, directed by Joseph Kaczynski. You can find more episodes at anchor.fm/movie date night, as well as on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review. Don't forget to check out our feature film, Tiny Dancers, which is streaming right now on Prime Video. We are on Twitter at DN Movie Podcast. And you can also email us at datenightmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, I'm Patrick.
I'm Ashley.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.